Welcome. This is the fourth demo session, and this week we'll be doing the first exercise will be about the co-integration test. So the first exercise is about co-integration. That's studying the long-term relationship, equilibrium relationship between two stochastic variables, where the two variables share a common trend. And then the exercises two, three, and four are about CARTS modeling. So let's start with the first one. As always, we have to set our working directory, session tab, set working directory, choose directory, and then I believe it downloads. I believe this is the right place. So, and after that, let's load the necessary libraries. Some lag involved. So here again, if you want to highlight the lines, press Shift and use the arrows. And then you can run a command either clicking the button from here or using Control Enter. So now the libraries are ready. Let's load the data. Hi. And then let's start extracting the data. So we have to, before we continue, let's first look at the exercise sheet. So again, we're dealing with the interest rate data. Again, I believe this is the third time doing we're looking this data, and we're asked to use Engel-Granger method, and we're asked to divide the whole sample into two sub-sample, one before the bankruptcy of the Lehman Brothers and another since then. So basically, this is just doing an Engel-Granger method, all the phases of the method. So actually, before we continue, let's have a quick glance at the home assignment. So for example, here, actually, after this week's demo session, you should be able to do the whole home assignment. And one of the part here is doing the co-integration analysis using the Engel-Granger procedures. And this is the first exercise of the fourth demonstration session. And then in the last part, you're asked to do CARTS modeling or some regime switching, and the regime switching models are the topic of next week. So basically after this demonstration session, you should be able to do the whole home assignment, each part of it. And for sure, you have to do the Engel-Granger test. So this is the exercise to look at. So first, we've loaded the data. If we want to, we can glance the data. It's over here. So first of all, let's take some data. T-bills, 3 months U.S. Treasuries, and Treasury bonds, 10-year Treasury bonds. And then let's make them as time series. And after that, we need our sub-samples. subsamples, and then let's look at the data. So here again, you're already familiar with this graph. Before 2008, the interest rate seems to sometimes have a interest rate spread between the 10-year and 3-month yields drifted from time to time up and then down and then up and then down. But then since 2008, there's mainly been a downward trend. So let's test whether we have a. So first, necessary condition for doing a co-integration test is that we have a unit root in the series. In other words, if a series is stationary in itself, it's constant around itself. So in the sense that it's not sharing a common trend with another variable. So both of our variables need to have a unit root, that is a stochastic trend, in order them to have a common stochastic trend. So let's look at the 3-month treasury bill before the Lehman bankruptcy. Our null hypothesis is that the series has a unit root. And then we calculate the test statistic. And then third, we compare this test statistic to the critical values of the test statistic, that is the probability distribution. So we are letting Akaike choose our optimal information criterion, and Akaike chose us a lag number one. And then we look at the test statistic and compare it to the critical values of the probability distributions. So here, as the test statistic is lower than the critical values, we do not reject the null, or in other words, the null stays in power. And when the null stays in power, that is that we have a unit root in our series. Then the same statistical inference for the 10-year treasury bond. Again, we calculate the test statistic compared to the critical value of the 5%. Our test statistic is lower than the critical value, meaning that the null stays in power. We have a unit root in our series. So that was for the bond series before the bankruptcy of the Lehman Brothers, and then let's look what has happened. Has there been any change after that? Yes?
You can take 10% little, the answer changes, right? Can we, like, you know, say like that?
This is the test statistic.
Yeah.
This is.
Yeah, even the 10% level is low. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
So here, this is the test statistic for the tau, and this is the test statistic for the phi. If you have a problem, remember which one is which, just remember the sign. So here the sign is negative. Look at the row that has a negative sign, and here it is positive. Look at the row that has a positive sign. I will not go through them. In the last exercise of the last demo 3 session, I wrote down some instructions how to interpret these test statistics. So you can rememberize them again. I will not go them through here again. So use them, but the main idea, or the main point, the most important point is that always use this first test statistic. This is the primary test, the one with a negative sign, and that's the tau 2 with a unit root test with a drift. So 3 month treasury bill after the Lehman bankruptcy, null is we have a unit root. We calculate the test statistic and compare it to the critical value. Again, the test statistic is lower, implying that the null stays in power. We have a unit root in a series. And then for the long-term interest rates, 10-year bond, again, the test statistic is lower than the critical value. We have a unit root. The null stays in power. So here in both of our samples, in both of our subsamples with these variables, the result is always that we have a unit root. And when this holds, the necessary condition for the co-integration is satisfied. So now we can start to studying that whether these variables share a common trend. So now we've tested that these variables have a own stochastic trend of their own, and next we want to study whether they share a common stochastic trend. And if they share a common long-term stochastic trend, that means that these series are co-integrated, or in other words, when these series drift, they drift around each other. Okay, so here, this is the Engel-Kranzer procedure. I have to look whether there were no nothing in the chat. So the Engel-Kranzer procedure has five different phases. First, run a standard OLS. Second, save the residuals. Study the stationarity of the residuals, and then build a error correction model by adding the residual to the model. So we'll go each phase through again. So first, in the first phase, we'll run the residual. In the first phase, we run the linear model for both of these subsamples. And here we are interested in, here the short-term interest rates are the dependent variable, and the long-term interest rates are the independent variables. So here the underlying idea of this standard linear model is that the movement in the interest rate is first shown in the long-term interest rates. So meaning that if the markets, in other words, if markets start to expect changes in the short-term interest rates, these changes is first seen in the long-term interest rates. So if the long-term interest rate starts to fall downwards, that it could be the case that it has created an expectation that the short-term interest rates will also decrease future downwards. So our linear models, let's look at the summary statistics of the first subsample before the bankruptcy of the Lehman Brothers. Yeah, the nice thing is that our independent variable is statistically significant, implying that there should be some dependency between the variables. So that's before the Lehman bankruptcy, and then after that, we observe that there has been a change. Before a bankruptcy of the Lehman Brothers, there was a statistically significant dependency from the long-term interest rate to the short-term interest rate. Here, meaning that when there's a 1% increase in a long-term interest rate, short-term interest rate will follow around 0.86%. So almost perfect goal movement between the long-term and short-term interest rate. But then after the bankruptcy of the Lehman Brothers, this dependency seems to have been lost. However, let's do the second phase. Let's save the receipts rules, and that's simply by running this command. Linear rec1 was the name of our model, and then we'll just specify the receipts rules from the series. If you want to look what's in the model data, you can just simply write view and name of the model, and here you can see, for example, these are the coefficients here, and here are the receipts rules. And if you click that, it'll bring the receipts rules, for example. And then there are a lot of other stuff. We'll skip them. So we'll save the receipts rules and test whether there is a unit root in the receipts rules. So here, the null is we have a unit root, and then we calculate the test statistic and compare it to the critical value. Again, we observe that the test statistic is smaller than the critical values for it, so implying that the unit root stays in power. The null stays in power. We have a unit root in a series. And this means, in this case, this means that there is, when the receipts rule of this linear regression is not statistically significant, it is not stationary. And when it is not stationary, there is no long-run relationship between the two variables. Then we just chose to use a lag number zero. So let's make a robustness check and use Akaike as our information criteria. And the result remains around the same. Some minor changes there. Again, the null stays in power. We have a unit root in a series. So that was before the Lehman bankruptcy. After the Lehman bankruptcy, second subsample. Again, test statistic, critical values. We do not reject the null. The null stays in power. We have a unit root in a series. And with the Akaike information criteria, the result remains the same. We have a unit root in a series. So in both of our subsamples, the result was the same. When the receipts rule between these two series contains a unit root, that means that there is no long-run equilibrium relationship between these variables. So in other words, there cannot be no co-integration between these variables are not co-integrated. However, we have done here the three first phases of the Engel-Granger procedure, and this result does not imply necessarily that we cannot look the error correction term. So here the difference is that our result is no long-term relationship, but next we study whether there is a short-term relationship between the variables. However, when there's no long-term relationship between the variables, it should be the case that there's also no short-term relationship. However, let's study that. So in the fourth phase, we save the residuals of our. We use the residuals of the earlier analysis and study and run another regression on the differences in the differences, that is, the changes for the interest rates. So earlier we studied everything on the level. These were on the level. So level means here. Level data. This is a standard interest rate series. And when we study the differences, we're studying these are the changes in the series. So we are now doing the regression for this and not for this. So we're studying the differences here.
Also, they're not same stationary as what the problem is.
Yes, for example, even though it seems that the residuals have a constant central moment, that they have a constant mean.
Mean is constant, but the variable.
Exactly. So here, UniCrude test also assumes that the series should have a constant variability. So this is one de deficit of the or shortcoming of the UniCrude test, that it assumes that the series tested has a constant variability. The variability remains like this, but here we observe that sometimes the variability is higher and sometimes lower. So we have some our UniCrude test is not perfectly fine here. But however, let's run the regressions. So we test the both models. So let's run them and let's look at the results of the first subsample. So this is before the. So here we are mainly interested in the error correction term or mechanism, and it is this residual term here. So this is first of all, the parameter has the right sign. Here, the negative sign means that this term corrects the stationary corrects the long-term movement of this series. So this sign should be negative because when these series are drifting away from each other, negative signs means that something is pulling this series back to each other. So that's why it is important that the sign is negative. It is also statistically significant, meaning that it has some statistical power behind. But here, this result is really strange in a sense that according to our tests, the series have no long-term equilibrium relationship, but nevertheless, there is a short-term correction between these models. So in other words, our model is not that good. We would have to study more detail why is this so? And when we look at the series here, we observe here that the variability in the in time varying variability in the variance of the term. So here, from time to time, there are periods where the variability is almost non-existent, and then there are times when there's more variability in the series. So this could be one reason that we get this result. Let's also look the other series. That's the long-term yields. Actually, the long-term yields, the variability here remains actually quite the same. There's some decrease in the variability, but that's not a large decrease. So here, most likely the issues in our models are related to the short-term interest rates. So probably the underlying, we should do something for this. So
Well,
some.
maybe you could see there might be more than one image used, probably.
So what could we do in this case?
In this case, is
Yeah.
that your difference once more, like individual or a two?
I believe that it. We can actually test that again. So what happens if we? So let's first of all let's look what will happen if we use differences, whether the unit root test is we get the stationary series. So I'm testing the first subsample, the changes. Okay, if we take just one difference, we get a stationary variable. So here, this variable here is stationary. Even and actually really strongly stationary.
Yes, it's only station.
Yes. So actually here the next question is are the problems related to the autocorrelation of the series? So that could be another issue. So if we have a strong autocorrelation in our series, the autocorrelation is biasing our test statistic. So if we correct the autocorrelation of the series, what would the result be after that? So actually, let's soon test the autocorrelation. Actually, we could do it now. So for the first series, our most likely, if we look at this series, or actually in this case, the residuals of the series. So let's look at the residuals. Make it look a bit better. So these are our residuals of the series. There seems to be some, for example, you observe that here it is the residuals are a little bit drifting upwards, then they are remaining around the same, but there seems to be some drift in the residuals of the series. So most likely when there's this kind of drift in the series, that's a sign of the residuals autocorrelation. So let's test that. So here, the null hypothesis is no autocorrelation. Again, we did a similar exercise as always. We calculate the test statistic and compare it to the probability distribution, or in other words, just look at the p-value, what's the p-value. And if it is below the 0.05, as it is the case here, we reject the null. The null does not stay in power. We have an autocorrelation in series. So most likely the autocorrelation is here. Autocorrelation is here messing up our calculations. When the test statistic is calculated, it is calculated with the assumption that there is no autocorrelation, but there seems to be autocorrelation. And if we in the first case we used Lundbock test and then we switch it into Spock-Spears test, and it'll give us the same answer that the null is rejected, that there's autocorrelation in the series. Then let's look at the subsample after the Lehman bankruptcy. Again, this is the important term. The residuals from the first phase from the standard regression model. Here, the sign is right, negative as it should be, meaning that when there's, so think again like this in that way, that when there's a 1% change in a residuals of the linear model, a negative sign of the parameter. So there's one increase of one unit in a variable. This can be just be x. Then the parameter here has a negative effect due to y, meaning that the parameter is pulling. When the series start to drift away from each other, then this parameter takes care that they'll return to each other. But however, in this case, It is not statistically significant. It is only noise. And here it seems to be the case that only the differences in the long-term interest rates are statistically connected to the differences in the short-term interest rate. So there is no short-term correction between the model, only some linear dependency. So here the interest, and then let's again test the receipts or the autocorrelation of them. The null hypothesis of the test is that no autocorrelation, and if the null does not stay in power, as we will see in the from the p-value, that means that we have autocorrelation. Okay, here the p-value is around 0.03. That's just around below the critical threshold. But nevertheless, we reject the null at the 5% level, meaning that we have autocorrelation in the series. And then with another test, we also reject the null, even though it's quite close to the critical threshold. So here, what we did in this exercise, we divided our whole sample into two sub-sample and studied the co-integration, that is the long-term relationship of the variable between these variables before and after the Lehman Brothers bankruptcy, and we found that there is no long-term relationship in both subsamples. However, there was some short-term correction before the bankruptcy, but not after that. So this result suggests that there could be some regime change or regime shift in the spread, that something has changed in the underlying process of these interest rates. But however, studying that is a further topic. We would have to use another model, and this was a here we were interested only about the co-integration technique. So here again, the main point first. In the first part of the Engel-Granger procedure, we studied the long-term relationship, and in the second part, the short-term relationship between the variables. And usually it is the case that there should be a long-term relationship between the variables in order there to be a short-term correction between the variables. So how can the variable correct each other from a time period to another if there's no long-term relationship between the variables? So that's a paradox. And then in the second exercise, we'll start going through CART modeling.
One question.
Yes.
The first one. Is there, I mean, doing the bar analysis, vector optimization? So we just know whether there is a kind of Granger causing from one direction to another, okay? Or the opposite. But is there even a direction of this causality in VCN?
So here, it is not about causality. It is about think about, for example, two technology stock share price. For example, Microsoft and for example, Google or something like that. So if you look the price data at the level series, just looking how the price drifts up and down, we studied whether these two stock prices, when they usually they're going in the same direction. So we studied whether they share a common trend. So, for example, when Microsoft is increasing, also the Tesla, also the Amazon is increasing, or other technology stock. We did not study about what's causing them to go upwards. We only studied, but when the series are behave, if we look at the behaviors of stock prices and the behavior seems to be the same, that whether they were connected, whether they share a long-term trend that when, for example, think about in this way that if the price of the Microsoft is increasing, but another stock price would also behave similarly, but the relationship would be like that would be an arbitrage opportunities. You just look at the, for example, if a Amazon stock reacts with one day lag to the movements of the Microsoft, you could just buy a stock day one and then sell next day with the higher price.
But one thing, if there were a relationship,
Yes.
hypothetically speaking,
Yes.
that we have found that there is kind of long-term and both long-term and short-term relationship between the short-term and the long-term interest rates. Now, what if we find if we find that there is a relationship,
Yes.
okay, then can we determine actually which is affecting what? Like whether the short-term is affecting the long-term or the long-term has an effect on the short-term, like is there any kind of kind of procedure to know the effect from one from on the other.
That would be an analysis technique of another model. So, for example, you could study that using a VAR model, vector autoregressive model. So, if you want to, for example, if you want to study whether reaction is lagged, you could run a Kranger causality. So, what you could do, you just take these share prices and put them into a vector autoregressive model and then run the standard procedures and then study the Kranger causality. That is, you test whether the movement in one stock share prices are helpful in predicting the share prices of another stock price. So that would be, for example, Kranger causality test.
Oh, so that's also possible, like for VAR, which VAR that is possible
Yes.
just to know the effect or the
Yes.
range of cause.
Yes.
Okay, and then VECM would not be applicable there because there is a kind of co-integration analysis,
Yes.
and we need to understand whether they are really co-integrated
Yes.
for any kind of long-term relationship.
So, for example, you would do it that way. You take, for example, this interest rate series and step. If the hypothetically the result is that there's a long-term relationship, you would take these two variables and put them into a VAR model and use that into a further analysis. Yes.
Thank you.
Exactly. So the second and third exercise are about univariate CARDS models, and then the fourth one is about multivariate CARDS. So first with the univariate CARDS, let's load the libraries and the data. And as always, we begin by looking at the graphs. So let's plot the series. So here we are studying the returns of the British pound against US dollar. So here again, just for the reminder, log changes are, if it's like British pound this day and logarithm of the British pound yesterday, we take the change of them. That's a log change of the British pound today. That is approximately the same as the relative change of the price movement. That is That is the British pound today minus the British pound yesterday divided by the British pound yesterday. So we're studying relative changes here, and these are relative changes what we see there. So if you just look at the graphs, the first intuition could be that's just some noise. There's nothing there, but in fact it is not. There seems to be, if we look at the more closely, there seems to be some oscillation from down to up. The series is oscillating here, and this is a sign of a stationarity, and we're trying to isolate what is the data generating process for this oscillation from up and down. And then again, we observe here a huge spike around 9%, and most likely, even though we do not see the time index here, that's the Brexit outlier. That's a huge outlier there. British pound, one day British pound lost 10% of its value. And then again, the global financial crisis is there are a lot of outliers there, and some outliers related to the COVID-19 pandemic. So first of all, this is a really nice way to show what's happening in the cards model. So first, we go the cards modeling step by step. So first, we just run here a standard linear model. So this is the first phase of the cards model. Think about this, that this is a y variable on the left-hand side, and then you have the constant term plus, let's just say that it's HT, that's our error term. So what's happening in the cards model that we're running a model like this? And then we are giving some structure to the error term. And here we are assuming that our error term is like composite of the sigma term. That's sigma, that is the conditional standard deviation times ET. That's a error shock. And here, for example, the error term could be normally distributed. So that's the error term from the first phase. We give it a structure that it is a composite of the standard deviation and the error term. Error term being normally distributed. And then we model the conditional variance of the model. So we take the sigma term, square it, and give some structure it. Let's just name the its constant term as a omega. And then the first variable is B1. It's a last period's squared errors plus second term is the last period's conditional variance. So we run a regression model, and it is this model. Before we continue, let's just check how the mean equation looks like. So YT is the mean equation here, and the sigma squared is the standard deviation. So we're modeling two different moments of the series. So first, let's look at the mean equation of the series. It only contains an intercept term, nothing else, and it's basically zero. So that's a good sign. When it's zero, it means that there's nothing. When it is zero, that means that all the movement in the series in our model is happening in the error term. So the error term should model all the movements we are trying to capture. So let's in order to study the conditional variance, let's save the residuals and square them. So here in our case, I wrote down here a CARTS model. In the case in this exercise, we're only running a ARCH model. So here, when we add 5 lakhs, the difference is only that we have only squared errors. On the right hand side of the equation. So this is the equation we're running now. So here as we're only using a linear model, and we have 5 lakhs in the model. It's only just thrown something out of thin air. So this is just an exercise. There's nothing economics behind that. We're only running a model without anything deeper behind it. So here, our series begins from the sixth observation. Fifth observation is the lakh number one. Fourth is the t minus two, t minus three. T minus four, T minus five. So let's run the model and check the residuals. So the squared residuals, squared residuals here are the last period error terms, shock terms, and here we observe that the first four, actually just looking at the p value here, the four out of 5 lakhs are statistically significant. So there seems to be a lot of heteroscedasticity in the model. In other words, you can think it like this way, that when there's a shock impact, shock happened last week, Thursday, or last week, yeah, last week, Thursday, it would still have an impact into the variable behaving today. So this is daily data, so these are just lags affecting over time. Stationarity condition of the conditional variance is that the sum of the variables should be lower than one. And here, when we sum up these values, we take that value, that value, that value, that value, that value. They are for sure less than one. Most likely they are around 0.35 from 0.40. So for sure there's a stationarity in the model. And then the interpretation of the parameters here. So these are squared values of the last period's shock term, error term. If these values are around lower than 0.05, that is a sign that the market conditions are quite stable, that shocks are not, that the shock impact is not strong. But if the value of the parameter is above 0.10, that's a sign of the uncertainty. So here, we observe that some parameters have a really strong impact. So in other words, there's a high uncertainty over time. So this could be a sign that We have so strong uncertainty in our model that you could say it's not realistic in itself, that there are some issues with our model, and we should look a little bit deeper what's in our model. Model this behavior a little bit differently. Or if we just think that the error term, the shock impact of the error term is so strong, maybe we could just throw the lags of the error term, shock term away and use a lagged value of the conditional variance in itself, like in the CARTS model. So here our model is only ARCH model. And another thing to look is that neither of the residuals is negative. So if there's a negative value, that is a sign that the non-stationarity of the model. But however, before we go in the CARTS model, let's have do a look visual graphs about the volatility clustering. So for sure, this is a sign of when the lagged impact is so strong that there's some volatility clustering in our series. So let's take the residuals and make them as a sine series, square them and plot them. Actually, here we are plotting the fitted values of the series against the residuals of the series. So here, this looks a little messy, but usually it is the case that when there's heteroscedasticity in a series, that this series receive y-axis would behave like a cone, meaning that when we go further right to the when we go further right to the series, that the y-axis would behave like this, that it would start to be, there would be a, like a cone-like structure, that it would be small, but then it would start to widen and widen and widen. So there would be some cone structure. So that's for sure a sign of heteroscedasticity here. I've limited the graphs because of the outliers. So let's look how it looks like without limiting the x and y-axis. But nevertheless, there seems to be really a lot of outliers here, and maybe there's some cone structure, but well, if there's some pattern, it's hard to say. It's hard to say. I'd just rather take a quick answer that when something is not behaving as it should by looking at the fitted values and residuals, when there's no cone structure, but the graphs gives a rather strange structure, let's just assume that there's something wrong in our model. So most likely our model is just not able to catch the underlying heteroscedasticity or the time-varying volatility of the series. And why is this so? This could and why is this so? This could be because of the residuals, because of the outliers. This is the Brexit residuals. The value is around 70, and the second highest outliers is around 10. So let's just by looking at the standard measures of the series. Let's look at the summary statistics of the series. Okay, here the maxed value, that's the Brexit for sure, is around 80. and the residuals of our series. So if we look at the probability value of the Brexit, well, this should be over around 50, yeah, 58. So the Brexit is so extreme outlier that it is 56 times the standard deviation of the series. So 56 times the sigma. So here, to say how an extreme event is that if you are applying a normal distribution and you have minus plus and three of sigma, three times the standard deviation according to a normal probability distribution, the values above this are, their probability value is less than 0.03%. So they are really extreme outliers. So here in this case, the Brexit outlier is just to throw a number from hat, would be the probability value would be something like this. Really extreme. And if we square the residuals, and this is, we use the squared residuals in calculating the volatility impact in our linear model, the Brexit. If we use squared residuals, let's look how that looks in the graph. And that's with a restricted y-axis and without restrictions. So there are heavy outliers, and then there's Brexit. So we have such, this observation is affecting our calculation. And when we have this heavy outliers in our series, that's basically biasing every possible test statistic, every possible parameter calculation. So one thing to do is just take the series and delete the Brexit observation away and look how the series would behave without this extreme event. So without, then, in other words, if we would get statistically and economically interesting results, that would be a case that the Brexit is just messing up our calculations. So one thing to do is just delete the most extreme outlier from the series. And if you do this in the research, you just have to say that I deleted this outlier, because these outliers are, for example, standard deviation is calculated by taking the average difference of the series. So when one average difference of the series is so huge, it's affecting the calculation of the entire standard deviation. So if we would throw this observation away, our standard deviation could be like one or something, or even less. Then let's look at the histogram. So here we observe from this shape that our distribution, our residuals are right skewed, that they're asymmetric in the sense that it is right skewed. So skewness is something we have to think about more carefully. And one way to deal with skewness is running controlling the time varying volatility, like in Karch model. So we could correct our underlying distribution by running a Karch model. Okay, here's the density distribution. This is the same. This is the probability distribution. And again, this is the same shape distribution as earlier, but this is as a probability distribution. So here the difference is only in scaling. Here, frequency from the y-axis is just the probability value. So here we observe again that the distribution is right skewed. And let's compare this distribution to the normal distribution in order to detect the possible outliers in the series. And so here, this is y-axis is about sample values, and the x-axis are the theoretical values of the normal distribution. And when we fit a straight line here, these are the values that coincide with the probability distribution. But when there's a when the difference between the sample values and the theoretical values starts to emerge, that's a sign of the outlier, a lot of outliers in the series. So, for example, in this case, when the outliers start to drift away from the deviate from the theoretical value, we could use a student distribution that is able to better, more flexibly able to capture the impact of the outliers. So again, let's study this same series doing the subsample analysis before and after the Lehman Brothers bankruptcy. That's our series. So again, we are running a ARCH5 with order 5 model. We run a standard linear model, take the residual. Let's look at the mean equation. The intercept is around zero. Great. That's a good sign of the model. There's nothing okay, when the intercept is zero, there's nothing conditional affecting the mean equation. The mean equation seems to be fine, in other words. Let's take the residuals and square them, and then let's estimate the conditional variance of the ARCH of order 5 model and look at the test statistic before bankruptcy of the Lehman Brothers. And here, only before the global financial crisis, of the peak of the crisis, only 2 lags are statistically significant. So for sure, the period after the Lehman Brothers is affecting the calculation of the series. So here, these residuals are sign of a homoscedastic squared residuals, and these are a signs of the heteroscedastic residuals, squared residuals. So we lost, we get a little bit less statistical significance, and this is a good sign, as this is a sign that outliers are affecting the calculation of the series. However, okay, here, this is something I almost forgot to look at. We have a 1 minus sign here, and in other words, what this means that we have a negative impact of the one of the lag affecting our standard deviation has a negative sign. So this is when we square something, we do not get a negative impact. That is just not possible. So this is a sign that our model is non-stationary. So just simply, this means that negative variance cannot have a negative parameter. It has to have a positive parameter. However, this is not different from zero, but there seems to be something wrong in our model. It shouldn't be negative. Then, after the bankruptcy of the Lehman Brothers data, let's look at the mean equation. Again, the intercept term should be zero. And when this is the case, there's conditional variances is not impacting the mean equation, and that's true. Then we take the residuals of this estimation and study the conditional variability. Conditional variance. So here we observe the change in values. We start to get more statistical significance, meaning that there's a heteroscedasticity in our series. But as we know that the subsample after the Lehman bankruptcy contains more outliers, so it's the period after this contains more outliers. It's most likely that the outliers are affecting our calculations and biasing our estimates. So let's leave the British. If we would like to study more deeply what's happening in the British pound, we would start to have to control these economic events. We would start to put some things into a mean equation. But here we're in doing these demonstrations, we're only interested in the variance equation and not the mean equation of the series. So we are interested in the variability of the series, not how the series drift oscillates up and down its center moment. So let's leave the British pound and then start studying Japanese yen, whether it's able to give some nice results. So this is. And we will do this by running a CARDS modeling model. So the difference between ARCH and CARDS model is that in the CARDS model, our variance equation contains omega is here the constant term of the variance, contains the lagged values of the last term error impact as squared, and then the lagged values of the conditional variance of the last period.
Conditional variance is not squared. Obviously.
Yes. So here, how these two terms differ from each other is that error terms affecting from the last period are the impact of the last period shock. Some just think that in this way that something bad happened yesterday and it's still affecting today. That's the shock impact of the yesterday today. But the lagged values of the variance terms is the persistence of the variability. So to simplify these things a little bit, you could think this as a Arma equation of the variance term. So here, the lagged value of sigma is the AR or AR parameter, AR variable of order one. And here, the lagged value of the error term is the MI term. So, like news impact from yesterday to today, and sigma is the persistence of the series, the persistence of the variability in the series. Meaning that when from time to time, when the persistence and the variability is high, you see that the variance is constant over some period, and then the variability changes. And here, the variability is quieter, calmer, and then again, there's a change in variability, and it persists. The variability persists again. So our first model is ARMA 1-1 CARTS 1-1 model. So we have AR and MI term in a mean equation and ARTS and CARTS effects in the variance equation. So these are our specs. That's the specs of for the variance equation, variance dynamics, CARTS 1-1, and the mean dynamics, ARMA 1-1. So let's estimate our model. We're using this model to estimate the Japanese yen. The whole sample from over around 20 or around 20 years of data. So here, let's start going. These are our results, the fit. These are our parameter values. So here, first of three parameters of here are our mean equation. These are the mean equation. Here, the first thing to notice is that both of these mean equations are statistically different from zero. That means that they're having an impact. They're not noise. But the first thing we observe is the value of the AR1 parameter is like a mirror image of the MI1 parameter. That means that persistence of the series and the negative shock impact of the last period are canceling each other out. So this means that these AR1 and MI1 parameters seem to be totally useless. We're just putting some stuff in our model, and these two terms are canceling each other out. These are the variance equation, the terms for the variance equation. Omega is the constant term. Alpha one is the shock impact of the last period's variance squared impact. That is about around 0.07. So that means that the shock impact of the last period is a little bit stronger than the normal market. So when we think about 0.05 here as a normal parameter, reflecting the normal market condition, it's a little bit stronger, the impact. And then the beta is the persistence of the variability, and the value is 0.9. So there's a huge, really strong persistence of the volatility in the series, meaning that when there's a shock impact, when there's a period that the volatility is high, it will volatility will also remain high. And these test statistics have been calculated using a standard standard errors. So then for the robustness check, let's also use the robust standard errors. Difference here being that the parameter values are the same as above, but the standard errors are calculated a little bit differently. And this means that when they're using robust standard errors, the standard errors are better taking into account the possible heteroscedasticity or the autocorrelation in the series. So this idea of this calculation technique is to eliminate the impact of the heteroscedasticity or the autocorrelation from the standard errors. And we need standard errors in order to make an inference, a statistical inference. So here we took the robust standard errors, but they are not, the results do not change much. Then the information criteria, we'll skip them. And then let's go to the diagnostics then. Diagnostic tests. So Jung box test here is a test for the autocorrelation of the series. And this is a really nice software. It has written down everything clearly what's happening here. For example, here, if you can't remember what was the null hypothesis of the test, and that's the basic thing of each statistical test, that you have to know what you're testing. But in this case, you do not have to Google it or something from the internet, but what was the null hypothesis. It says you here directly that no autocorrelation. And when we look at the p-values, they're all high, everything way above the 0.05, meaning that the null stays in power, we have no autocorrelation in the series. And if we square the residuals and do the same test again, the p-values will remain high, no autocorrelation in the series. Then let's test whether our model hasn't captured the conditional heteroscedasticity, and we're applying here three different lags. So here the null is no heteroscedasticity, and in each case, looking at the p-value, it is way above the 0.05, meaning that our model, there's no extra conditional heteroscedasticity. Then we go a little bit more a finer test. Newbold stability test is for the stability of the parameters. So the null hypothesis of the Newbold stability test is that the parameter values are constant. That means that there is no extra variability in the series. Meaning that if the null stays in power, the parameter is stable. Here we have two different test statistics. That's for the joint test for all of these variables, and then we have the individual test. Let's beginning from the individual parameters. Here, look at these values. From 0.1, a higher value, and then a little bit higher value. And then you compare it to the individual test statistics here. You observe that only there's some variability in the beta 1 parameter and the omega parameter. So some issues with the stability of the parameters. This isn't killing the model immediately. It just says that there are some sh it just point out that there are some shortcomings in the model. But then look at the joint statistic. It is way above the critical value, meaning that all these parameters together are not have contain some variability. So again, there are some shortcomings in our models, but more important is that there's no autocorrelation. And when there's no autocorrelation, this means that most likely that our parameters are unbiased, or there's no huge bias in our parameters. But nevertheless, there seems to be some variability in our parameters, and we should control them. For example, think about, let's plot the series, what this could be. So for sure, you're able to see that this is the changes in the Japanese Zen, but there are a lot of these spikes, and we should control them better. There's some instability in our calculation. And then a sign bias test, it's about the misspecification of our conditional volatility. So here, the sign bias test that here the null hypothesis is that positive and negative shocks on volatility are not predicted by the model, not predicted by the model have the same impact or asymmetry. So here we observe from the probability value that the null stays in power. So no impact, negative sign bias. It's about the asymmetry of the negative shocks that when the null stays in power, this means that large and small negative shocks have the same impact. So large and small negative shocks do not have a different impact. That would be the alternative hypothesis. And same for the positive sign bias. Again, the null stays in power. There is no asymmetry in the positive shocks. And the joint effect shock is testing this all bias test together. And here it seems to be the case that even though the individual statistics again are the null stays in power, then when we test their joint effect, the hypothesis is tested, meaning that there are some issues in our model. But from this, we cannot conclude what is the sign bias, what is causing the asymmetry in our model. And then the last here, adjust the Pearson goodness of fit test. So this tests. The null hypothesis here is that there is no difference between the empirical and theoretical distribution. So here we are comparing the empirical distribution to the we are comparing our empirical distribution to a theoretical distribution, normal distribution, and in this case, it seems to be that there is a difference between the empirical and theoretical distribution. So meaning that if we compare this sample here to the normal distribution, there's a difference between these distributions. I'll get to that point a little bit later. Nevertheless, we did not find any autocorrelation or heteroscedasticity. But in the second phase, let's throw the AR1 and MI1 order away from the mean equation. They look to be unnecessary and run the model again. A little bit more parsimonious model. Okay, here the parameter values remain around the same as earlier. Then let's do diagnostics test, Ljungboxed autocorrelation test, no autocorrelation. The same test for the squared residuals, no autocorrelation again. And then let's test the conditional heteroscedasticity, also the null stage in power, each case, no heteroscedasticity. And then the stability test of the parameters. Here the values actually remain the same. So, and actually, this is the same case with the sign bias test. The joint test is different from zero. And the comparison of the theoretical and empirical distribution, there the null is also rejected. So, for short, even though we removed the unnecessary AR1 and MI1 from the mean equation, nothing changed. Okay, but here let's do a minor shift in the underlying distribution. So earlier we assumed that the underlying distribution is normal distribution, this belly-like distribution. So let's use a student distribution next. So here, what we're allowing using student distribution, we're allowing a more flexibility in our series. So using student instead of normal distribution allows our model better to graph the impact of the outliers. So here we are trying to take the outliers more seriously. I will show you soon what's the difference in graph, but first let's estimate the same model using student distribution without the normal distribution. Parameter values are around the same as earlier. No changes in statistical significance. Here, the minor change is that the shape parameter is estimated, and the shape parameter here is the degrees of freedom. And degrees of freedom in the student distribution lower the values of the shape distribution, fatter the tails of the student distribution. I will show you soon how this looks like, but let's look at the graphs. Other tests before that. Autocorrelation test, no autocorrelation. Squared residuals, the autocorrelation test, no autocorrelation. Conditional heteroscedasticity, no conditional heteroscedasticity. And then the stability test of the parameters here. Our parameter values become actually larger than in the previous exercise. And most likely, this is a sign that we're better able to, we make a correction in our model. And this model we estimated is better able to point out that there are these stability issues in our parameters. Again, the joint effect of the sign bias is rejected, but here the major change is adjusted Pearson goodness of fit test. So what we did, we threw the normal distribution away and used student distribution that is able to model the impact of the outliers. And here, according to our result, there's no difference between the empirical and theoretical distribution, meaning that In the earlier case, we rejected each of these tests, and here the null stays in power in each case, meaning that our student distribution is doing a better job than the normal distribution. And here I'll show you the picture, what's the difference. So here we compare the student distribution, the normal distribution, and the empirical distribution. Here this black line distribution is our empirical distribution. We see that it is highly peaked, high kurtosis. And then the blue line here is our normal distribution, and the red line is our student distribution. So here, if we compare these outliers in our sample to the shape of the student distribution, we see that they're better aligned than with the normal distribution. So here you can see it nicely how the student distribution is can better deal the outlier impact. Okay, then the next question, of course, is where do these outliers come again? So let's divide our whole sample into two subsamples before and after the global financial crisis. And this is before the global financial crisis. Okay, before global financial crisis, again, our parameter values are around the same as earlier. Our degrees of freedom is a little bit higher than in the whole sample, meaning that the outlier impact is smaller. There are less outliers. Then the diagnostic Lumbox test, autocorrelation, no autocorrelation, and again, no autocorrelation. Conditional heteroscedasticity, no conditional heteroscedasticity, the null stays in power in each case. If we look here, if we look at the individual test statistics, each of them remain in power in 10%. So no issues with the stability of the individual parameters. However, we reject the joint test statistic at the level of 5%. So not perfect results, but this seems to look a pretty good result. There are only minor shortcomings in our model. Sign bias test, the null stays in power each case, and the same, the goodness of the fit, the null stays in power each case. So the only issue we actually had was just the rejection of the joint statistic of the stability, new Bloom stability test. So this result suggests that the next subsample analysis after the Lehman bankruptcy, we should see all the problems are coming from this part of the sample. So let's run this regression, and after that we will have a 15-minute break. After the bankruptcy of the Lehman Brothers, parameters are around the same here. The degrees of freedom parameter is smaller than the first subsample, meaning the implicit impact of the outliers. Autocorrelation test, the null hypothesis, no autocorrelation, the null stays in power in each case. conditional heteroscedasticity, the null stays in power in each case, no conditional heteroscedasticity. Nuplum test, joint test, again rejected at the 5% level. Individual, and here there are some issues with the individual individual parameters. For example, persistence of the volatility is rejected at the 1%, so outliers are impacting the estimation of these parameters. And again, here we also observe that's only negative sign bias, a negative outlier impact is only, that's rejected on the 10% level. So that's a weak statistical signal, but joint effect is rejected at the 1%. However, the difference between the theoretical and the sample distribution remains in power. So for short, after the global financial crisis, the outlier starts to impact our series, and we should use the mean equation to control their impact. For example, control the impact of the financial crisis period. That would probably improve our model. But here next, let's continue around 10 past, a little bit earlier. So it's time for a break. Welcome back again. And then let's look at the questions asked. So we've already done the first and second exercise, and then there are only third and fourth to do. So in the third one, we're modeling cards with asymmetries, and then in the fourth one, we're doing a multivariate card analysis. So the third one, we're only asked to run Clouston-Jagathan-Rankel model and asymmetric exponential cards model. So let's run them. So in the first model, let's just run the model. And this is actually before the Lehman Brothers bankruptcy. So earlier we talked about the possible impact of the outliers. So we are now setting some asymmetry in our model. So we are hoping that asymmetries in a volatility, this model is able to catch the asymmetries in a volatility. So let's run the model. Here, the new term is gamma one. And it seems to be statistically significant with standard errors, OLS standard errors, but if we use robust standard errors, it loses the statistical significance. So, meaning that when we're controlling better to possibility of the autocorrelation or the heteroscedasticity in the calculation of the standard errors, the new will actually stay in power and gamma one is not statistically significant. But however, what is the economic interpretation of the gamma one term here? And it's actually the leverage impact. So think that in that way, that when the markets are moving upwards, investors are loaning more and more credit, and they're using this loan credit to buy the stocks. So they're borrowing money in order to invest. And when the market starts to crash or go downwards, they're in a problem with the, in up when the markets are running upwards, this will boost your returns. But when the markets crash, this will not only eat your or profit, but you this also will make your losses more heavier. So this is a leverage impact here. So here, if the sign of this parameter, this gamma effect is activated when the impact of the shock is negative. So this only is about actually, the difference is about the sign here. So here we have a positive sign. So it's about good news, the impact of the good news. So think about stock prices going upwards, or actually in this case, the valuation of the Chen when there's profits to be made. By trading Chen and US dollars, the positive gamma sign is about the positive impact, positive news impacting the trading here. However, looking at the robust standard error, the null stays in power, and then when the null stays in power, gamma is not different from zero, so it's not statistically significant. Again, let's look our model. Autocorrelation test. Autocorrelation remains stays in power in each case. And secondly, the test for conditional heteroscedasticity stays in not the null stays in power in each case, meaning that there is no conditional heteroscedasticity. However, again, we have some issues with the stability of the parameters, and this is interesting. A joint statistic of each other parameters remain in power. But the gamma one parameter is rejected at the 5% level, so there's some instability in the gamma one parameter. However, no sign bias in our model, and the theoretical distribution of our model coincides with the empirical distribution. So let's run this model again after the bankruptcy of the Lehman Brothers, whether something has changed. Okay, after the we remember from the data that after the Lehman bankruptcy, we get more, our sample contains more outliers. So now the gamma one parameter starts to is strongly statistically significant. However, when we control the impact of the autocorrelation and the possible heteroscedasticity in the standard calculation of the standard error, it loses a lot of its statistical power. Well, nevertheless, it is significant at the 5% level.
Does it mean that after the financial crisis, the investors relied more on the upon the level of leverage and the bank credits because of this being statistically significant. Now, gamma one is statistically significant. I mean, I just want to
Or,
interpret this. How to interpret this statement?
you could say that the impact of the leverage in how the series are behaving are become stronger. So you could think it in that way that just for the case of the simplicity, assume that the investors are using the same ratio of leverage always. But after a shock period, this impact becomes statistically significant. So it's not about the changes in the leverage effect in itself, but it is how about the leverage impacts the
Yes,
series. Yes. Again, autocorrelation test, null stays in power, conditional heteroscedasticity, the null stays in power, there is no such a thing. Stability of the parameters here, okay, here more rejections as earlier. Here, after the global financial crisis, the stability of the parameters becomes an issue. It is almost a problem. Actually, it is the problem in each case, individual tests and also joint tests. And then there's a joint effect of bias also. We do not know what's the individual effect, but there's a joint effect. When we test all of these biases, negative or positive, or degree of differences in negative or positive, when we test all of these tests, somewhere there is some bias. And the theoretical distribution becomes rejected. The difference between the empirical and the theoretical distribution becomes rejected. Okay, so here, in other words, after the bankruptcy of the Lehman Brothers, there seems to be some change in the underlying dynamics so that we should do some adjusting in our model so that we're better able to catch what's the underlying process affecting this our model. So before the Lehman bankruptcy, GJR model fared better than after the bankruptcy. Okay, let's look at the residuals. Let's take the residuals and the fitted values and plot them. So we're comparing the squared residuals, okay. Okay, I jumped too far ahead before comparing the residuals and the fitted value. We have to run an ECOG model. So that was for the GJR model and now the exponential CARDS model. Then let's interpret the parameters after the estimation. Okay, before the Lehman bankruptcy, gamma one is here statistically significant. So here, if the gamma one is statistically significant, there's a positive sign relationship between the returns and conditional volatility, meaning that greater impact on conditional volatility than negative news. Good news have greater impact on the conditional volatility than the negative news. So meaning that most likely, in other words, the period before the Lehman Brothers bankruptcy was mostly positive period. So it is no wonder that we find that when there's an boom going on, that the boom keeps itself going on. In other words, when things are going good, they're also most likely going good in the future. If the sign of the gamma would be negative, it would be a sign about impact of the negative news. So here, one thing also to note is that you observe that the values of these parameters are negative. And earlier, if you remember, that's a sign of the non-stationarity of the volatility. So why can these exponential curves have a negative parameter sign? That's because this series of conditional volatility is locked here. It's a natural logarithm, so it's more flexible. In a natural logarithm, if the value is value can be negative. So this does not mean that we're taking logarithm of the negative value, because that's an error. But this is meaning that we do not our model is less restrictive than the Cartes model. Or in other words, when we're studying the logarithm of the conditional variability, this logarithm of the conditional variability can have a something can affect negatively into that. Meaning that when we're taking logarithm of the series, it's about we're applying a different scaling than without logarithm. And logarithm is the opposite of the exponential. So if we take log of the exponential, let's say one, the value is one. If we take exponential of the one, value is about that. If we take log of one, it is zero. But as the logarithm and exponential cancel each other out, it's just the same thing. Okay. Robust errors. Also, with the case of the robust standard errors, we find statistical significance here. The autocorrelation test, look at the p-values in both cases, the null station power in each case. Then the homoscedasticity of the residuals, the null station power in each case, meaning that no conditional heteroscedasticity, null is not rejected. Stability of the parameters, joint test rejected, individual tested. Okay, alpha one is here. That's a really high value. Over. In other cases, the null station power, but the alpha, also stability of the last period shock impact is really strongly rejected. Meaning this is a sign of the outlier volatility in our series. So we have some issues of the outliers affecting our series. But no sign bias. Look at the probability value and goodness of fit tests, also the null station power each case. So this was yes, this was before the Lehman Brothers bankruptcy. So let's what could be the case there? First. Actually, it was the first subsample. That's the second subsample. You see a lot of outliers there. First subsample. Okay, so here, yeah, this is. There is just something strange in Japanese yen trading, and you see that there are these odd spikes all around the series that probably there's nothing serious happening there, but it's just it's so in other words, this seems it seems to be the case that the Japanese yen is just normally really volatile currency, so it has a strong movements in both directions. And then let's study the exponential cards modeling after the crisis. Again, gamma is statistically significant. Here again, good news are affecting. Okay, so here. So good news. Good news actually in this case is about good news from the perspective of the US dollar. So in other words, when there's a positive change in a yen to US dollars, then it is the denominator that is becoming larger, and when the denominator is so US the valuation of the US dollars remain constant, but when the valuation of the Japanese yen to dollar increases, that means that you need more yens in order to buy one US dollar, or in other words, there's a depreciation in the Japanese yen. So here the gamma impact is actually the positive sign is actually mean that there's a negative impact into the yen valuation. So yen is losing valuation in this case. Or you could say it in other words that US dollar is just strengthening against the yen. Okay, diagnostics, autocorrelation, none. Conditional heteroscedasticity, none. Stability of the parameters, joint test, rejected. Individual test statistics, some issues with the beta. Okay, some issues also with the stability of the gamma one parameter. Some sign bias. Okay, and here again, the theoretical distributions, the difference between empirical sample and the theoretical distributions are rejected in each case. So overall, the result is the same as we did some analysis with the British pound that after the Lehman bankruptcy or the global financial crisis, there is some change in the underlying dynamics of the currencies. And these underlying changes are common all, in both cases within how the British pound is valued against the US dollar and how the Japanese yen is valued against US dollar. Then let's look at the residuals. So this is about exponential cards model. Let's plot the squared residual and the estimated variance. Here, the green line is about how well our model is behaving. So what we want is here that the both of these line move, green lines would move in the same direction with the residuals. And it seems to be the case in some cases. From time to time, the model is able to catch the impact, but not always. And yeah, this most likely this is because of these odd asymmetries here in the model, these odd spikes in both directions. Then let's look after the Lehman bankruptcy. Our model is able to go in the same direction as the receipt source of the series. That's a good sign that our model is able to catch the right direction of the movement. Last one here is the COVID-19 pandemic. And let's look at the raw receipt source. Lot of volatility clustering of these outliers there. Okay, then it's the fourth exercise, cards in mean modeling and multivariate cards modeling. So here the difference cards in mean model, the difference between the standard cards and cards in mean is that we set a cards parameter also in the mean equation. So earlier what we did is that we had a model mean equation just a constant term, and then the conditional heteroscedasticity we want to model. That was the earlier case, and now our mean equation is that we have this Cards M effect also in the mean equation, in addition to it being in the variance equation. So in the earlier case, we first estimated the mean equation, took the receipt source, and started to model them separately. So here we have a kind of bidirection from the receipt source and the mean term, so that the cards term can also affect the mean behavior of the series, not only the volatility, also the first and second moment, not only the second moment. So economically, what could be the interpretation in doing this? This could be, for example, the variability of the risk premia of the currency. So that, for example, for example, right now the valuation of the yen is probably like around 150 to $1, and inflation in Japan is it's still, if I remember correctly, it's still going upwards. I can't remember, has it also turned downwards like in other Western countries, industrial countries. So for example, when if we modeled the changes in yen return today, the increase in conditional risk the risk premia could reflect the future riskiness of the Japanese yen. So for example, in what direction the outlook or the perception of the Japanese economy of future, what's the perception of the Japanese economy tomorrow or next year?
How could Gotch M become a kind of variable over here like that?
So the estimation, so here estimation is done using maximum likelihood estimator. So that's not, we're not using OLS. So So how we can estimate this so-called pi connection between the mean and variance terms, it's about using this estimator that is an iterative algorithm. So it takes some values for the both equation, and then it starts to search how these changes in these values are affecting the changes of these values. And when the estimator has found the probability that maximizes the likelihood of these parameter values, it just stops and it will print that. So maximum likelihood estimator is able to do this job. So cards in mean, let's first we set a standard deviation in the mean. So here, cards m is true and arch power is 1, that is 1, not squared. Let's first study the impact of the standard deviation of the volatility, also the impact of it in the mean equation. And we also added AR1 into the mean equation. So we have a standard persistence in the mean equation in addition to the standard deviation of the volatility affecting the mean of the series. Again, here, the first line here are the impact of the parameters to the mean equation. Mean equation is here, what is oscillating here up and down. So we are trying to analyze whether the volatility also affects the series moving up and down its mean moment. And we find neither of the parameters are statistically significant, so not different from zero. Let's skip the other autocorrelation test because they look like the earlier results. There seems to be not much different there. Okay, then we had an autoregressive order of 1 in the mean equation in addition to the volatility affecting the mean equation. So let's throw the autoregressive. Let's then square the standard deviation, that is, put a variance in the mean equation, whether it has an impact. And no change in the result. Neither the statistically significant autoregressive of order 1 can for sure have a negative impact on the mean equation, not in the standard deviation or the conditional variance. Are there any changes in the results? 0.01, 0.05. Well, actually no change if we squared standard deviation. So next, let's throw the AR of order 1 away and use only standard deviation in the mean equation. Okay, no change. So in other words, the standard deviation has no impact in the oscillation of this series around its mean moment. It's just noise. Okay, then there's this next part, and this is something we will skip. This is because, so here, for casting the CATS model. And why we are skipping this is that if we run a standard forecasting, we would get some results there. But if we want to run a rolling one-step ahead forecast using a CARTS model, if we run this function, I could go and have a lunch, and then the estimation would be ready. So this is so computationally heavy to do that it will take 45 minutes to run this one function. So we'll skip that. But nevertheless, if you want to do forecasting using CARTS model, here's the code for you. You can, for example, in your master's thesis, if you want to do forecasting using CARTS model, here's the code for you. You can use this. Let's skip that one and go to the multivariate CARTS modeling. So here in the earlier exercises, we only studied one series node, and now we will study a vector of series that contains three different variables. So we're running multiple CARTS models at the same time. So let's take all of our currencies, British pound, euro, and Japanese yen, make them into time series, and let's build a matrix that contains these three series. Okay, here ordering does not affect anything. Here the ordering is irrelevant, and why is this the case? Because the estimation is based on first running a single univariate CARTS models, and then when the univariate CARTS models are estimated, it will take the result and go to the second step. So here it has no impact. The impact of ordering of the variables does not matter. In the VAR vector autopressing model, the ordering was highly significant thing from the last demonstration session. So first, we're taking three currencies and we're estimating each of them using CARTS model. And so we're replicating a standard CARTS model three times here and fitting all of these three CARTS model together. And let's look at the result. Okay, here are the series, euro, pound, yen. Excuse me. So there's actually nothing new there. It'd be the same thing as running single univariate CARTS models. So only gives us the parameters. But then let's do the second stage analysis and study the time varying correlation between these three currencies. How these three currencies are moving against each other. And this is done by the dynamic conditional correlation CARTS model, multivariate CARTS model. So here, the correlation term has a different meaning than a standard Pearson or Spearman correlation in that sense that the correlation can vary over time. So if you would calculate the correlation of the currencies, that's the standard correlation metric. So for example, here On average, the gold movement between the euro and British pound is around 0.5. So that's a constant metric. So here we are studying a time-varying metric that can vary over our sample. So that's the specs of the DCC model. And let's run the model. So here, this is the results of the univariate euro, US dollars, cards model. This is the British pound, and this is the Japanese yen. So these are each estimated separately. First of all, just by looking at the variance equation, we see a high statistical significance there. In each case, the alpha and beta 1, alpha 1 being here the last period shock impact, and the beta 1, the persistence of the conditional volatility, excuse me, variance, all are statistically significant. And then let's look at the correlation metrics between them. So here, DCC A1 is the shock impact into the correlation metrics, highly statistically significant. And here, the DCC beta 1 is the persistence of the correlation among all of these variables, also highly statistically significant. So that means that there, according our preliminary result, there's a time-varying correlation code movement between all of these currencies. So let's look about how it looks like. First of all, let's save the correlation data. This command is for the covariance of the series, and this is the correlation of this series. And this dimension of the correlation of our series gives that we have 3 times 3 correlation matrices for all of our sample, meaning that if we want to look at the correlation values of the last day, it would be these values. And if you want to look at the individual values, you can isolate them in this way. And let's take one of these series, let's take the correlation between the British pound and the euro and make it as a time series and plot how they are varying. So this is the time-varying correlation between the euro and British pound. So both of these currencies are valuated against US dollars, but this is the gold movement of the British pound to US dollars with respect to the euro US dollars. So what we want to look here are shifts in the correlation. So first we observe that before January 2007, the correlation was stronger, but then it become weaker. And then there has been some changes in the level of the correlation. So meaning that there's a time, the correlation seems to be, if we would, for example, like to hedge euro against the British pound or vice versa, we would rather like to look the graph like this time-varying correlation than to look at the constant correlation. Let's look at the all of this series together. So here we're looking how the correlation between the euro, the British pound, euro, the Japanese yen, and British pound to Japanese yen are correlated. So for sure, there's a time varying volatility. Here, for example, here, this is it. For example, here, if you observe that the correlation is a higher, and there's a stronger shift downwards from this period to this period, in the case of the euro, yen returns. Same period, there's not as heavy shift in the downwards in the correlation. Whereas if you looked at the British pound to Japanese yen, it's quite closely behaving the same as the euro British pound, but euro to Japanese yen is so for short, this suggests that there is something happening in the British pound. In the case of the British pound, the changes are more drastic. Okay, this is actually the last part here. This is about dynamic hedging. I'll have to check. I'll have to check the exercise. Okay, what we were asked in the B part, the multivariate Katz model with perform analysis of the dynamic conditional correlation, that is the DCC Katz estimation, interpret the model. So, okay, this is a extra part. So let's just look at this quite quickly. So this is about dynamic hedging, time varying hedging of the currencies against the currencies of the other currencies. So let's take our correlations between these currencies. And then we need the variances of these individual currencies. And then let's calculate the dynamic hedging ratio. And this is done by, based on this calculation, take the correlation matrix, multiply it by another variable, multiply it by the ratio of the variables in question. So that's the standard deviation, what we need to calculate the dynamic hedge. And these are the dynamics. And then we'll calculate these time varying hedges and make them as time series. And let's look at the data one. So, okay, here. If you're interested in hedging one currency against the movement of the other currencies, you want to catch the moments when they start to deviate from each other, when there are major changes in the currencies. For example, here is a huge deviation between red line being the euro British pound and blue line being the euro Japanese yen. So, for example, if you want to hedge against a possible volatility against Japanese yen, you could use as a euro British pound as a hedge. For example, in this case, there are huge volatile impacts in euro yen, whereas the euro British pound is less volatile. Here, from here, when we value, when you look, when we look at the pound versus Japanese yen and the euro against Japanese yen, the series behave almost similarly. So that's not a good hedge. So you could expect that when something is happening in the one currency, if there's an extreme event, the same, there will be a same impact also in another currency. So here's the difference between the time varying hedge ratios is not that big. So that was the dynamic hedging part was some extra thing. And then there are some notes for the DCC forecasting. Is there, and that's something we can skip. So again, this was, we're done this week. So have a nice rest of the week. And last week, there will be the last demonstration session. And then it's about next week, we will also look at the instructions for the home assignment. And that's about it. See you all.